Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, we are coming up on the end of November. We have a couple more events before the end of that time. We have our epic demo, the card game from the makers of Star Realms.
Right.
That is coming up this Saturday, the 21st.
Yep.
Is it 1:30?
That's the thing where the buy-in gets you your deck, right?
$5 intro fee gets you a deck of 30 cards you will get to keep. It's a really fun game. I am hoping to sneak in and play it if I get a chance. If not, we do have people here who can help us run it.
I have a question, Randy.
Yes?
Is the buy-in deck you get the only deck you use, or should you also bring your own deck?
That is the only deck you use.
Okay, cool.
The Epic is set up such that you can... The box comes with 120 cards... You can either play it as 430-card decks of one color. You can mix the colors. You can draft. There's all kinds of different gameplay options in it.
That's pretty cool.
All out of one deck that costs $15, which is a pretty good deal.
What a deal.
And then you can add on extra decks for more players. Mm-hmm. Then on Friday, the 27th, we'll have our Black Friday event.
Yes.
And, of course, we'll be closed on Thursday, Thanksgiving, 26th.
Yep. Everybody go have some fun, meet with friends or family, get some turkey, and then come give us a visit on Friday.
Yeah. And on Friday, we'll be doing our Black Friday sale. We've been doing it for the last, 7 years. And you basically get, for every $25 you spend, you get a $5 gift card.
Yep.
You can spend that as early as the next day, or you can break it up and give them out as gifts for other people.
Yes.
They will never know you didn't pay money for them.
Never know. They seem to be pretty popular holiday gifts.
They
people
do.
Seem very
yeah.
happy when they're coming in with them.
And then also, if you have a rogue card, it is $5 for every $20. So that's a good... If you haven't gotten a rogue card and you want to, this would be a good day to do it, remembering that the $35 for the rogue card does not count against your Black Friday total, because we don't want you math nerds cheating us. And then finally, on that Saturday 28th, will be Local Comic Shop Day, the first of a national event by Comics Pro, which is the Comic Retailer Association. And we'll see how that goes. If you're interested, I definitely recommend coming out, because we're not sure we'll do it again. It's more focused on sort of variants and special issues and the kind of thing that we don't necessarily focus on, but we know some people like. And there are some cool things like the oversized Rick and Morty, the oversized Invader Zim.
And there's some fun variant stuff.
And there's some fun variants.
On the Wolverine and some of the... There's some other Marvel books.
If you like variant covers, there are some cool variant covers.
There really are.
National Comic Shop Day also seems to me to be a good day for people to just go to their comic shop and buy a nice frivolous graphic novel or something like that.
And that is the deal. It is on the same day as American Express's Small Business Saturday.
Oh.
It is basically another thing to encourage people to go to their local shops during their Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
Which, of course, we're in favor of.
Yes. Buy yourself something nice.
Yeah. All right. A little bit of news this week, and then we'll head on into our previews coverage. So I don't know if you guys saw this Kickstarter that Tom Fowler is doing.
Is this the D&D thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
So artist Tom Fowler, who you may know probably not from books like Mysterium and Jed Winnick's Green Arrows, stuff that I really love, but he's probably been flown under the radar a little bit. He's a great artist. I think he's done some Vertigo stuff as well. Is doing a Dungeons and Dragons and Doodles is the name of the book. It's about 100 pages long. It's a hardcover book. It's like $15 to get the book. It's a really good deal. $5 is shipping. But basically, for that, you get a hardcover book, you get 5 prints, and essentially it's him just doing a bunch of D&D themed doodles.
No, this is not the one. There was something a few weeks ago that I posted.
No, it's not the A to Z of monsters.
Okay, but it seemed like is it sort of a whimsical sort of design or?
No, he's an artist. He's got some stuff where he's just designed some monsters and.
I always like seeing D&D art. Honestly.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Go check out the Kickstarter. We'll link it in the show notes. I backed it already, and then if you have some money burning a hole in your pocket. He has 4 slots already filled and 4 more left of a $325 level, which gets you the book, and then he will also draw you a custom head and shoulders of your character.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is super cool to have a pro artist draw your character.
The ultimate geek out.
Yeah. It's a little rich for my blood, but if you have the money or you're looking for a cool Christmas present for one of your gamer friends, go see if those are all gone yet.
That's like an ultimate gift for your gamer friend.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Like Ferris Bueller said, if you have the means.
I highly recommend it. And then finally, we don't usually report on acquisitions for film this early, but Fox has acquired the rights to Amulet.
Oh, right.
Which is by a friend of the store, Kazu Kibishi, who was our first guest for All Ages Awesomeness.
Right. So he has the super awesome Amulet. Oh, I'm sorry, Nick?
No, he's just a really nice guy. That's all I was going to mention.
And I was just going to say he's one of the guys who did the covers for the last run of the Harry Potter.
That's right.
Yes, he is.
So that dude's big.
Yeah, Amulet is a basically a family adventure in another dimension with elves and steamships and all kinds of cool stuff.
Sort of a mixture of sci-fi and fantasy. Yeah,
it's got a little Miyazaki to it.
And yeah, and an all-ages approach.
I really dig it. It's been popular at our store, and I think hopefully Fox will do right by the movies and get it right, and then we'll actually go forward, because I could see it being a really cool series of animated movies. Yep. All right, so we're going to do one of our regular features, which is our previews overview. We look through the previews catalog, which is the giant book from Diamond that we order from, which you also can buy at retail.
Right, and when a new previews hits us, we're basically ordering for stuff roughly 2 months out, if it's comics. If it's action figures, it could be like 6 months or a year out.
And if it's graphic novels, more often than not, it's like 4 months. There's usually a little bit further. But this is all stuff that will be coming in February or a little bit later. We are doing our initial orders now. We'll do our final orders in about a month. If there's stuff in here you want, if anything sounds good, you can always pre-order it. Our order cutoff on this is going to be this Saturday. So if you have anything that's interesting, get it to us soon.
Yep. But people can still, like, if it's just a single issue or a new series, you know, you can add it to your subscription.
You can always add it. It's just the weird stuff.
Right. And it does help us to know then, because then we can add it onto the order if we know before it.
Yep. So if anything here strikes your fancy, let us know before Saturday, preferably. After that is still fine, because like I say, we do order this stuff for the shelf.
No, after that they die.
So we're going to go through and pick a few of our favorites from this month. And Dave, why don't you start us off?
I'm going to start us with something weird.
Yes.
I've got a really large list, and I'm not going to do everything on here, but I do want to mention this weird one. It's a manga from Dark Horse. I don't even know if I can pronounce the name. It looks like it's Danganronpa. Danganronpa. That's what it looks like.
Sure.
The little quote from somebody says, equal parts social sim, murder mystery, and courtroom thriller. Now, I'm actually going to just read the description because it's kind of bonkers. It sounds a little bit of a... It sounds to me like Battle Royale kind of thing.
Okay.
But the art looked nice, and it looks... And it's freaky. So, each year, the elite Hope's Peak Academy selects only the most gifted and talented students to enroll, plus one ordinary student chosen by lottery. Makoto Naegi was that lucky person, or so he thought. When he shows up in class, he finds the elite students are a bizarre cast of oddballs under the ruthless authority of a robot teddy bear principal, Monokuma.
Oh, that old story.
And you can see there's this creepy-looking teddy bear on the cover right there. That's him. The bear lays down the school rules. The only way out of Hope's Peak is to not only murder another student, but get away with it, as every murder is followed by a tribunal where the surviving students cross-examine each other.
Well, that sounds healthy.
Yeah. Anyway, the art looks good. I guess it's based on a video game and an anime thing that's going on right now, too, but so strange that I want to check it out. Danganronpa.
Nick, what is your first pick?
My first pick is actually a DC one. Mainly, I'm just happy to have something I can
give. I think this is on all three of our lists, actually.
I actually think it is. I mean, I would hope so.
This
is the Legend of Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Number one.
Yes.
Written by Renee DeLiz and art by that person as well, and Ray Dillon.
Yep.
I don't know, it's just sort of, you know, it's a 9-issue miniseries, you know...
It's set on the island, right?
Renee DeLiz is the last unicorn.
Oh, yeah, she did the art for the last unicorn adaptation recently, which was beautifully, beautiful art.
Yeah, she was the art. She is not actually the last unicorn.
No, she's not the last unicorn.
She's that, too.
Oh.
That's the interesting thing.
Well, that's probably why they hired her for the last unicorn book.
Right, she has trouble drawing with her hooves.
Yeah.
But, anyway.
This is sort of about Wonder Woman's childhood and sort of, you
know, pre-coming to man's world.
Exactly. So I think that's interesting, and it'll be nice to have a Wonder Woman book you can give anybody, I think. I mean, all ages...
Yeah, you know, the Sensation comics that have been coming out sometimes have all-ages stories, but sometimes have kind of sophisticated psychological dramas that are not really all-ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Wonder Woman 77, the throwback to the Linda Carter ones, that is pretty good, but a little bit pricey.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is going to focus on sort of relationship stuff with both her and, you know, her mother, Hippolyta, so...
This is a book we've needed for a long time.
Yeah, it's very true.
I assume it's essentially kind of adventure on the island, like there's something strange in the forest, you know, and we're sending out people to investigate.
Well, they've got a lot of Greek mythology and stuff to play with, too, You know, Dave, something you mentioned, though, they always call it Man's World. I think when the Wonder Woman movie cuts out, that they should do, when she first comes to Man's World, the James Brown song Man's World should play.
That would be
while she's looking around, while she's looking around and exploring.
It's not too far out of Zack Snyder's.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I take it back.
He does like a certain degree of literalness with his songs.
I take it all back.
No, and I'm just basing it on the cover. The cover is gorgeous to the first one. Yep.
I'll definitely, on art level, since I've got the last unicorn thing, I'll vouch for her art easily.
Yeah.
But that is my first pick.
All right, my first pick is from Marvel, because why not? And that is Captain Marvel number one.
I was going to put this on my list, and then I was like, no, Brandy's going to pick that.
So Captain Marvel, the Carol Danvers, has been a character and costume I like, but I've never been able to quite plug into her book. Kelly Sue DeConnick's take on it has never quite resonated with me, despite having David Lopez on art and a lot of people I like. But the new Captain Marvel number one that's coming out from in the Marvel relaunch is Michelle Fasekas and Tara Butters, who you might know better as the people who are running Marvel's Agent Carter TV show. And the art is by Chris Anka, who you might know as the artist who does awesome art. And this is going to be Carol as the head of a new Alpha Flight space program, the first line of defense to protect the planet from extraterrestrial threats. Now, I feel kind of bad for Canada, who clearly had the name of their super team stolen for a space defense team.
I thought it was actually supposed to be the Canadian Alpha Flight, though.
It's possible.
No, I thought it said, like, in the thing, like, yep, that Alpha Flight.
No, whatever. It says, yep, Alpha Flight.
That means it's Alpha Flight.
I don't think it does.
I just think that they have been brought in for...
Well, I see Carol on the cover standing in front of a bunch of...
ships. Yeah.
So I think she probably went to, Shaman and Sasquatch and were like, I really like your name. You can't have it anymore.
But yeah, I guess if not, it's just the same way they use for Alpha Team, Bravo Team, that kind of...
I'm going to guess it is not Alpha Flight. It's a nod, but I don't think... I don't think we're going to see Sasquatch in space.
How dare they.
Although that would be great.
Black in space would be really cool.
Yes. But anyway.
Another story.
Looks really good. I'm looking forward to it. And Dave, what's your next pick?
I need that Marvel's previews, Randy, because my next pick is also in there. I'm gonna do a pick and a cheater pick. Because
what?
That's right. Because this pick is actually just a continuation of an extant book. This is Silver Surfer number one. Which I did not know this was happening. They're reviving the Dan Slott Mike Allred book, which is cool because I actually really like that. Or it grew on me. They sort of Doctor Who esque.
It's the Doctor Who of the Marvel
version.
Yes.
At this point. Right. Which also had a cosplayer. At the Wizard World who was Silver Surfer cosplaying with I presume his girlfriend as Dawn, and he was the guy whose shorts left little to the imagination.
Yes.
He may have scarred some children.
I have to say, the cover to this one is gorgeous. Not only is it pretty, because Mike Allred art is always good, but all the little nods to little toys and sort of interesting items from the Marvel Universe. I know there's like Cyclops' visor, but there's also a barrel of sea monkeys flying through space.
And there's a Viewmaster because of Mike Allred.
Yeah, and a Viewmaster.
Anyway, since that's old news, though, but I'm still excited to see it. I'm cheating in another Marvel while I've got the book here, which is the Star Wars Obi-Wan and Anakin miniseries.
I dubbed the thief. That was on my list.
That was on my list, too, actually.
Not anymore, it isn't. Although, actually, I have not read up the thing on the precise storyline behind this, but it looks like it's a sort of a lost era, you know, I guess they went in the movie straight from Anakin was like a little 10-year-old kid to he was, what, 16 or whatever.
Yeah, this is pre-Clone Wars.
Yeah, and this looks like, this is when he looks like he's like 12 or something in the art here.
It was on my list just because of the creative team. It's Charles Soule and Mark Tichetto.
Mark Tichetto is, who's that?
He's the guy who actually just finished up the...
He did the Journey of Star Wars Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah. He also worked with Rucka on Punisher.
Yep, and he did a very good job on the Force Awakens, I thought. So with Charles Soule writing, it's pretty much natural. I've warmed up to that Clone Wars era through, you know, expanded universe stuff over the years, so, and Marvel's proven themselves, so I'm interested to see what they got to say about it.
I will say there's an action figure variant of this that,
no one wants.
Jake Lloyd, isn't that
Jake Lloyd, action, yeah. Jake Lloyd,
and I think I actually had a little action figure.
I was going to say, I know that they made a figure of that.
Yeah. But I don't want that. But I do want this book.
The least sought-after variant.
Yes. Nick, what's next on your list?
Okay, well, if everyone's going to do a Marvel book, I guess I should do a Marvel book that you guys are going to hate.
That's probably true.
And this one is Spider-Man and Deadpool number one. The collective sounds of Dave and Randy crying like little babies.
He's already in the Avengers. How much worse could it get?
No, honestly,
he's in Alpha Flight now.
Honestly, yes, he's in Alpha Flight. He runs Alpha Flight.
Kill him, Puck.
Nope, they're best friends now.
Is that a miniseries or a
book? Actually, that's the cool thing. It's an ongoing.
No,
it's that basically them teaming up. Spider-Man hates Deadpool. Deadpool loves Spider-Man, so it'll be an interesting dynamic. Honestly, this just makes perfect sense. I mean, two of your best characters doing a team-up book, and Randy's looking at me.
Who's the other? Spider-Man's great. Who's the other best character?
Deadpool. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the wisecrackingest book of all time.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, Deadpool is basically a Spider-Man ripoff with guns, so...
And that's
Spider-Man
the thing.
Plus Deathstroke.
And they've occasionally crossed over in their books, and it's been a fun time.
The only Deadpool story I really liked was the one where they sent him back in time to Spider-Man Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
So this may be the book for you, Randy.
Nope.
And honestly, the sort of big thing about this one is that the writer on this is actually Joe Kelly. And I think this is the first time Joe Kelly will have worked on Deadpool since his original run on the character.
Yep. And Ed McGuinness, who also was the artist on that
so
run.
So it's sort of a back to the past.
Yeah, the funny thing is, much as I hate Deadpool, and I do, I know you people think I'm joking, I hate Deadpool. I actually liked the Joe Kelly Ed McGuinness Deadpool run before he became Deadpool, the guy who's in everything, when it was just kind of a weird book. Yeah. This book I might at least read and see if it's good, because I liked what these guys did with the character.
And it's got a cool hip-hop variant cover, which I know we're going to get.
Yep. So first hip-hop we'll be able to get.
And then I'm going to do a cheetah print, because Dave did a cheetah print.
What? Oh, look what you started, Dave.
But mine is going to just be a quick one. It also refers to Deadpool, just because. Deadpool number 6, which comes out in this previews, I have to point out, because it's Deadpool 2099, and it has like the weird kind of cover that all the 2099 books.
He won't rest until he's destroyed every franchise.
Yep.
Mainly, I'm just doing.
I hope Deadpool shows up in 1872.
How about 1601?
1602, yeah.
Okay, I think that's fun. You guys don't, but I'm wrong. I'm right. You're wrong.
For purposes of your pick, you're correct. Yes.
Yes.
So go Deadpool. I'm Team Deadpool.
All right,
Dave. Or Randy, I guess I should say.
No, we're back to me!
No!
It's a cheater.
You don't get a pick!
So, my pick is actually from Valiant Comics, who are, I know from our ordering, a lot of you guys aren't reading.
But you should be. There's actually a lot of good stuff.
But there's some good stuff in there. And notably, this one that we'll probably give a shot to, it's called Faith Number 1. It is, it's one of their characters who's a Harbinger, which is their equivalent of mutants, basically. She's got flight powers. She's always been sort of even in the relaunch and in the previous one, she's sort of overweight. She's one of the few overweight women in comics.
Yep.
And she has flight powers. And she's also been always sort of nerdy. Like, she's a Whedon fan and all this kind of stuff. She is very much a fangirl with powers.
Right.
Her original name was Zephyr. And then her mean teammates would call her Zeppelin, because, you know, she was fat. But she was awesome, and she was always one of the most fun characters. And one of the things that Amanda, our staffer Amanda, noticed when she was trying to read some of the Valiant books is that they were all really kind of dark.
Yeah.
Faith is a lighter character. So she's going to be – this is her solo where she uncovers a deep-rooted alien conspiracy, and she's going to be having to deal with that. Artist is Francis Portella, you might know from Green Lantern, and Marguerite Sauvage, you might know from DC Comics Bombshells, and the writer is Jody Hauser from Orphan Black. So this ought to be kind of a fun book. This is a character unlike any other character in comics, and I feel like it's one of Valiant's potential breakouts. So
that seems like that's got a pretty good pedigree on that book.
Dave, you have another 3 or 4 picks for us?
I might. There's something I bookmarked here, and I have to see why I bookmarked it. It must have been the writer. Oh yeah, this is a minor note of interest. I'm gonna cheater pick it in. Batman Superman 28. It's written by Tom Taylor.
Yep.
And it's a 3-part arc that he's doing, sort of an Untold Tales from their early days. Since this guy has handled those characters so well in Injustice, Gods Among Us. I'm going to give it a look.
Who's the artist on that?
Robson Rocha.
I don't know who that is. But I'm going to do a Steeler cheetah pick from you.
What? No.
Because while you're mentioning Tom Taylor,
he's
doing a book called Green Lantern Corps Core Edge of Oblivion Number 1. It's it's a mini series, and that is him basically doing a Green Lantern Corps story. And we love Tom Taylor. He's done a really good job handling everything from Superior Iron Man to Injustice to basically, if there's a book that seems like it'd be a terrible idea, you can give it to Tom Taylor and he'll make it good.
Yep.
And just a good idea with All New Wolverine and just being a really good book.
I would argue that All New Wolverine is arguably not a great idea either. That he's managed to make it work in a way that a lot of lesser writers wouldn't have.
Well, you know what I think he should be given at some point? Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
He's the guy to do it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the dynamics he did with the characters in Injustice makes me think he could pull off a misfit team.
I can see that.
A little bit at each other's
throats. I think Tom Taylor should write the Micronauts.
If they could do the rights to it, yes.
But they can't. IDW's Micronauts sound to have to be like half Micronauts.
Right.
You can buy Bug. My the important one.
My actual pick, and this is maybe my sort of big pick of the thing, is from Boom / I guess Arkea.
Yeah.
They're one and the same now.
Yeah, Arkea was bought by Boom.
This basically is like a graphic novel pretty much made for me. It's Paleolithic fiction, yeah. Action-adventure. It's called Mesolith. It's a British graphic novel, and it actually, I would have guessed like more of like French or maybe Italian
it's,
or something.
It's British, or do they translate it into English?
I believe they just take the governor.
Oh, right, okay.
They take that, and they replace rubbish bin with trash bin.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Let's see, it says, it's set 10,000 years ago, it is the eastern shores, they say, of Stone Age Britain, and it says, actually, they don't get into a lot of specifics, but it seems like it's sort of a boy on the cusp of manhood, trying to survive in this dangerous world. You know, in large part, this is one that I'm interested in for the concept and the artwork. So
the artwork looks great.
Yeah, I'm just crossing my fingers that it's good, because there's not a lot going on. There's Jeff Smith's Tuki, which I like, but has veered almost a little too cartoony for me once or twice. So I will see if this has the dark seriousness I need for my Stone Age action.
Yep. Nick, what's your next pick?
All right. My pick is probably an obvious pick, but it's a hardcover coming from, I believe it's Image. And it's Nameless, right? That's hardcover.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grant Morrison and Grant Morrison's new six-issue mini, I think it was.
Yep.
Crazy, insane about spells, magic, aliens, and lots of
Wait, there were spells and magic in that? I thought it was just sci-fi.
No, there's spells, magic.
Okay, all right.
There's magics of protection. Yeah, the guy.
But it's futuristic, right? It's all futuristic.
Kind of, sort of. There, it's basically about a sentient asteroid coming to kill us all.
Okay, all right.
And there's a man who has like the ability, who has no name, who has the ability to do magic, to basically cast spells to keep the astronauts safe.
Is this man weirdly bald and Scottish?
He is not.
Okay. Just wondering.
He's not weird and Scottish.
Just making sure.
And I'm blanking on the artist's name.
It is Chris Burnham.
It's Chris Burnham. Duh.
Right.
Beautiful artwork. I'm curious to see if this is going to have any backup material like Grant Morrison's breakdowns or some of his artwork designs.
I was looking at some of the breakdowns he did that you showed me from Multiversity or Character Design.
You always forget he's a good artist, too.
Yeah, he's actually pretty talented.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see all that stuff. So, yes, I will buy this, even though I kind of lost track of it in single issues. I think Red in a Giant Chunk will be most interesting.
So my pick is something that I was surprised to see, and especially surprised to see from Viz Media, who I mostly know from doing manga. But they are doing something that I've always thought Wizards of the Coast should do, which is an Art of Magic the Gathering book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they're doing it for Zendikar, which is one of their popular settings. It's got characters, events, creatures, a ton of existing art, and the art for Magic is great. It's always a shame that it's only presented in little tiny card form to me. So they're going to give this a nice full hardcover treatment. It's 240 pages, full color, and is basically an overview of the Zendikar, which is the heroic world that is attacked by the unnatural Eldrazi, which, if you're magic people, you know that whole story. If you don't, just trust me, it's a world that's attacked by alien-type magic people.
I enjoy invasion-type stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is really cool. I'm surprised that Viz is the one doing it. I'm surprised that Wizards isn't putting it out themselves, but I'm really curious. I've always said they should do an art book for this, and I may wind up picking this up.
My next one is a trio of books.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. I'm breaking all the rules.
I was bad.
But it's thematic. I'm just going to reel off some. These are some reprints of older graphic novels that have been out of print for a while.
Okay. What do you got?
Midnight Nation from JMS. One of his best graphic novels. It's kind of a horror road trip mm-hmm. thing. That's coming back into print. Azrael, the classic miniseries
yeah.
that brought the character into being and had it was written by Denny O'Neil. And art by
Joe Quesada
at the time.
And this is one of their big trades, so it's got the first few issues of the ongoing series as well.
Is that the deal? I couldn't remember.
And that was drawn by somebody really
And that
good.
Is drawn by Barry Kitson.
Yes.
Oh yeah. So I'm liking some of these bigger trades they're doing, and I had never read Azrael until I bought it from our friend Jarek a couple years back, and quite enjoyed it. I was surprised at how good it was.
I like Sword of Azrael, the miniseries, a lot. And I actually read the first
Sword of Azrael. That was
I actually read the first few issues of the Azrael series and liked that too. I think the character, unfortunately, has not been well served.
We just sort of, kind of veered away.
I like that we're getting all the Bat books.
Yeah, me too. All the stuff. This is all the stuff I read when I was into my teens and in college. I guess it was college. All the Chuck Dixon, Robin, and Birds of Prey, and all that stuff, and Nightwing, mm-hmm. and this was in that same era. This for me was my golden age of Batman. So
interesting.
And what's the other one, Cheater?
My final Cheater pick is the new biggie size trade of Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol.
Oh yeah,
Is coming out. Doom Patrol is something that I don't love it because it's just a little too trippy for me at times.
Yep.
But it is one like I always enjoy flipping through I've got the older volumes of it, and it is a good time. It is, you know, Grant Morrison's whole deal was to take the Doom Patrol, who was supposed to be sort of the team that dealt with the weird stuff at DC, and make it. He's like. You don't know what weird is.
And he did.
Weird isn't just a guy who's got weird scales and a tail or something like that. You know, weird is other dimensional Dadaist, you know, artists coming to life. A
sentient street.
Yeah, sentient cross-dressing street, actually.
Yep, that's right, that's right.
I also just really liked what he did with the team. Interplay a little bit.
Considering it's Grant Morrison, but there was a surprising amount of heart to the book beneath it all, as well as some of his, dark sense of humor percolating throughout.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, that's my little trio of cheaters. Nick, what else you got?
Well, you took Azrael for me because I wanted to mention that. let us go with I didn't have a lot of love for this growing up, but I know a lot of people did. But I think it's interesting that they're actually going to do a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers new series.
I was going to mention that just to mention it.
It's going to be written by Kyle Higgins. So he's
a guy who did Nightwing.
Yeah, a guy who did Nightwing a lot. And I thought the covers look cool. They're sort of splashes of their different characters' armor. Mm-hmm. And I actually think they have great design work for it.
Well, it's also I don't remember ever seeing an ongoing Power Rangers comic.
No, what they've done is sort of one shots or one offs.
And those little baby graphic novels.
And little baby graphic novels. And I'm kind of curious to see if they can do a full on series. I'm sure it will be a lot of fun. And I think people will enjoy it quite a bit.
And that is from Boom Studios.
From Boom Studios.
Okay, I have one last big pick and a couple cheater mentions, and then we'll wrap up from there.
Yeah, I'm closing in on the stuff since I threw out so many.
So there is a new thing from DC as part of one of their new initiatives to reach out to younger kids. Called Secret Hero Society, the Study Hall of Justice.
That was on my list too. It looks
this
cool.
is a little. It's a little book. It is by the people who did Batman, Little Gotham. So Dustin Wynn does the art, so you might know him, Descender. And I don't remember who the writer is, but
I was under the impression it was like a prose thing.
It is. It's illustrated prose.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And, if you've got younger kids, especially in sort of middle school, I would guess, or a little younger, this is going to be a story of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman as kids in school.
Yeah.
High school, isn't it? Aren't they in high school, I think?
To me, it looked almost more like it might be middle school.
Might
be. I'm not 100% sure. If you're looking it up, Nick,
it's page 433.
Put the page down.
But anyway, it looks like fun. I'm sure it'll have nice illustrations. The cover is really beautiful. And it's nice to have these characters sort of reach out to younger readers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then my cheater picks are Spider-Woman Volume 2, which collects issues 5 through 10, but is actually, in many ways, Spider-Woman Volume 1, because Volume 1 was actually the old costume, Greg Land was the artist, and it was all tying into Spider-Verse.
Right.
Volume 2 is the introduction to the new costume, the new artist. This has been one of my favorite books, and we'll be referencing it again when we get to comics for this week.
As much a Volume 1 as I can conceive
of. And it's really, really good. I really like this book. And then Lazarus Volume 4 comes out. That's Image's Lazarus, the dystopian sci-fi book that Greg Rucka writes with Michael Lark on art. It collects issues 16 through 21. That continues to be one of my favorite reads.
Nice. Anything else?
That's it for me.
All right. I'm just going to power through a few real quick.
Yep.
I forgot to mention there's a new Swamp Thing, which I have no idea if this can come off or not, but Len Wein, the creator of Swamp Thing, is writing it.
Yep.
And Kelly Jones, who most people probably remember from doing the covers from Batman getting his back broken in the
90s. Right.
But also does horror stuff, especially with he's done Dead Man and a billion other horror comics. Batman is a Vampire. He did that story.
Yep.
He's going to, and he does something of a Bernie Wrightson, you know, an exaggerated pastiche sort of Bernie Wrightson style. So I'll just be curious to see what comes of that. There's a couple of interesting. And the first volume of the new Constantine series hits, which I've generally liked. So, you know, if you are looking for, I would say, a slightly more pop, Constantine, and a little bit less of sort of the sometimes dreary approach of the old Vertigo stuff, then I think people should check that out. I've got one or two sort of fancy editions that have coming out. There's a Best of DC's War Comics Artist Edition. And this is this has like Joe Kubert and Alex Toth and all those other guys. They did some just amazing artwork on that.
To be clear, this is the kind of thing we don't order for the shelf.
Right. That would be one of those ones where
if you want it.
Yes, do let us know.
Well, there was another artist edition that was really eye-catching.
Let's see. What was the? Do they even say the price on this one?
No, it's like $200.
Yeah,
it's up there. But if you love the art, if you want to see sort of, I've got a few of these artist editions. They're gorgeous.
Or even if you just want to get Dave a present.
Yeah, if you want to get Dave a present.
And if you want to get Nick a present, and you're really feeling, there's another artist edition on the other side.
I missed that one.
And this is the Avengers, the George Perez.
Now this one is different because it's not an artist. It's the Marvel. It's the artist select. So it's full color.
Yes.
And it's not quite as big as the artist edition.
But it's still fancy.
But it is fancy. It's a fancy art cover.
Don't tell me it's not fancy.
Where George Perez picks out his favorite Avengers stories and they collect a few of them.
Yeah, it looked great. I am very curious.
And I am not a greedy Gus who's asking for presents.
But presents are fun.
Nick actually got a present. Let's see, there's a, what else did I have on the list? Oh, the other kind of oddball one was Eric Shanwer's Oz books. So they're doing a coloring book with those. You know,
oh, that's kind of cool.
The adult coloring books are becoming a big thing these days.
Yep.
Kind of just they a are. Fun pastime and stress reliever. So they've taken his pre-existing Oz stuff and just turned them into coloring books, which seems like a fairly ingenious idea.
That is.
His art is that clean line art, almost the same way Hergé's Tintin stuff is. So it's like it's made for being colored. And I think the last thing I will mention is a book from a guy I don't usually follow, Rick Remender. But this is also on the caveman front. Dynamite has something called Devolution. And it seems like in the modern world, something happens that turns back the evolutionary clock, and basically sort of our cities all sort of fall into an apocalyptic state of disrepair as we become Neanderthals again.
Seems legit.
His sci-fi sort of stuff doesn't always connect with me, but because of the topics, I gotta give it a shot.
Yep.
Nick, you got any others on your list to wrap?
I have two other quick things. They're doing the Civil War Secret Wars trade paperback, which
we all liked.
I think I'm going to break down and pick this one up. I haven't been picking a lot of the Secret Wars books up, but this one I think the story was great enough, and the art was good. I love the ideas in it. So that one, and then just because I think it's a fun idea, but the new Captain America Sam Wilson book, the fifth issue in this one, we get a new Falcon.
Yeah,
and I'm curious to see who that is. They haven't said who it is.
Well, they're like, "How's it feel now, Sam?"
if you read this week's Captain America #3, you will know.
Oh, very cool. Well, I have not read that. I'm looking forward to reading it, and now I'm really looking forward to seeing who Falcon is.
All right,
but that is all I have.
That is a wrap for our previews this week. Remember, we are doing our final orders on Saturday, but then we'll also have our final order cut off a little while after that. And always single issues, you know, unless it's something crazy hard to find, we will be able to order it for you. So any of that sounds good, you can add it to your sub or special order.
And pick a preview sometime.
Because it's a fun thing to go through.
Yes.
And we'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for this week. We are talking comics for the week of November 18th, and it's another good week for me. I was really happy with my stack of stuff this week.
It's just another huge week.
Yeah.
I think the past couple of weeks, usually I think you and I, because we read a ton, have like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I've had like 18 or
Yeah, I've had like 18 or 20 books this week. And there was a lot of stuff I liked this week. There's also a bunch of trades, but we'll get into all that. First, we'll do picks, and I'm going to start. This is another week with a lot of Marvel stuff going on.
That's true.
So both my favorite books came out this week, and I'm cheater picking one of them and picking the other one, but either way, I could have flipped this easily.
Yeah.
But the one I'm picking is Ms. Marvel number one. They are restarting the same creative team. This is 8 months later after the end of Secret Wars. The most notable thing, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the first like page, Kamala Khan is an Avenger now. And so that's quite a big change because she was just sort of a fangirl with powers learning to deal with it, and now she's suddenly in this Avengers team.
Now, that was part of the all-new, all-different Avengers.
But that's an all-new, all-different Avengers.
Yeah.
It's mentioned in here because this is the book about sort of what she's doing the rest of her life when she's not being an Avenger, so, and how that affects her life.
Right.
So there's a big story going on with Bruno, the boy she's known since she was like 6 years old, who has been in love with her for that long, and he has a new girlfriend, and that is causing her some stress, even though she, at the end of Secret Wars, basically told him there was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's still bothering her. And the other thing is, as always, Ms. Marvel has always been sort of addressing, in addition to the sort of universals of being a young girl and dealing with teenage issues and that kind of thing, the very notions of something like being a Muslim,
right,
in America, and gentrification, poor neighborhoods becoming. So after the Secret Wars, her sort of, you know, heavily Muslim middle class neighborhood,
uh-huh,
has a lot of yuppies and condos and stuff moving in.
Oh, interesting.
And because this is the Marvel Universe, there's super villainy type condo developers. And they're also using Ms. Marvel's image to try and sell their, because they didn't ask for permission, they just put up a big billboard with her picture on it.
Oh, that's great.
So that all ties into it really nicely. There's a new
cultural appropriation.
Yes,
going on.
Yes. New villains. This all works around the emotional story of her and Bruno and their relationship. Has spectacular art. The first part of the book is done by Takeshi Miyazawa, who's one of the regular artists. And the second part is done by Adrian Alfona, who's the other regular artist. Cover is by Cliff Chang, and it's just gorgeous.
That's a super powerhouse art team.
It has got the usual cute, you know, there's some funny stuff going on. There's nice bits of Marvel Universe dropped in the middle. Good characters, good supporting cast. Kamala's a very winning lead character. And then it's got heart to it too. This is one of my favorite books, and it comes back really strong. If you've never read Ms. Marvel, you can jump in on this. If you've been reading Ms. Marvel, you're not going to miss it.
Bold words.
Nick, what's your pick?
I'm going to pick not a Marvel book.
What? Insanity.
No Marvel book for me. Pod person.
Insanity.
It's true.
What have you done with Nick?
He is right over there. No, I'm going to pick an image book by the name of Huck, number one.
Yep.
Yep, and this is written by Mark Miller. So, really, kind of out of left field.
Nick's a pod person.
Before we got the issue in, there was some people were like, is it Huck Finn?
Yeah,
It's not Huck Finn.
It is not. It's just a guy named Huck.
Yep.
And it's art by Raphael Albuquerque. And
yep,
if you know who Raphael Albuquerque, you've probably read American Vampire. You've read, he worked on,
you may have seen Blue Beetle.
He's an amazing artist. And I actually want to say, Millar writes a pretty darn good story. There's a lot of sort of superhero, Superman type stuff going on in this
one. So what's the premise?
The premise is basically, it's a small town, and a young, I mean, he looks mid-20s, somewhere in that, is sort of a clerk, and he does things to help people.
Yeah.
Amazing feats, like finding lost things, or other things that are even smaller stuff.
He's got powers. He seems to be Superman-esque in that he's got a variety of powers, but it's not just like speed and strength and all that. He seems to have sort of an intuitive understanding of the world. There's a little bit of that simple autistic kind of thing going on.
Like a gentle giant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like he looks a lot like Steve Rogers or something along those lines.
Yep.
But it's also focuses on a newcomer to this town and sort of what she thinks of this as a sort of this town's secret.
Yep.
And I actually thought it was very hopeful, very sort of fun.
Opposite of all things that Mark Millar does.
Yeah, pretty much. And
well, Mark Millar was quoted as saying that basically Man of Steel did so much psychic damage to him that he had to do this as a response. This is very much a, here's what Superman should be like if he was in Smallville. It's
And of course, Mark Millar back in the 90s did write the Superman animated series comic book.
Which was great.
Yeah, and had, you know, really little or no traces of his kind of trademark acidic qualities.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like there's too much of that here. It's sort of...
I would say there's probably none.
No, not really.
At least in the first issue. And I don't... I don't get the impression he's planning to twist the knife.
No, I don't think so either.
This is very sort of straightforward, and the art is gorgeous. I mean, Albuquerque does sort of just the normal stuff. Cars, houses. I mean, characters look fantastic. So. Well,
I thought, you know what I thought was interesting? Is this guy is just like almost, I don't want to say naively good, but he is like really good for goodness' sake.
Well, he has, I mean, there's an origin that deals in, and there's a reason that he does a good deed every day.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got like a list of things he might do that are good deeds and things like that. And
it kind of ramps up towards the end on what good deeds.
There's an inciting incident that will change everything.
Yeah. Right. And that does change everything. And I'm curious to see where it leads. I honestly think Millar's sort of on a roll lately with interesting ideas. I didn't stick with Chrononauts, but I liked what I did. You read Starlight, which you liked
quite a bit. I like Starlight quite a bit, yeah.
I know people are really enjoying Jupiter's Circle and Jupiter's Legacy.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we're seeing a different side of Mark Millar, and it's interesting. So, but yeah, no, I really enjoyed the first issue. It's hopeful.
Yeah,
Dave.
We'll come back in 5 issues and see where we are. Nah, I think it probably will be. My pick is a pick that I've picked many a time before, and often comes through for me.
That was your cheater pick.
Is that my cheater pick? Yes. No, that's my pick.
Oh, okay.
You wrote it down wrong, or I said it wrong.
You said it wrong.
Okay. My pick is Astro City number 29. This is the first part of what looks like it's going to be at least a two-part storyline, but could be more. I don't know. The conceit on this is that it's sort of an alien invasion from the perspective of aliens.
Yeah.
These aliens in this look like... They look like Ditko-designed aliens, like the kind of weird aliens that you might have showed up, like, even in Spider-Man back in the 60s. And it's from the point of view of a sort of a young... he's like a student alien, and you kind of, you know, they have sort of a jargony alien talk that's... You know, if you ever read Bug and Micronauts or anything like that, there's a bit of that. They, you know, it's like it's clearly sort of analogs for our world stuff, but sometimes you know, tweaked for alien concepts. But it's him and his friends trying to kind of, you know, almost a little Stand By Me-esque. They revere the evil alien warlords who kind of, some of whom we know from like Astro City stuff as bad guys.
Okay.
But they think, to them, the First Family, the sort of the FF-like group of Astro City, those are the, you know, those are the villains. It's like, oh, you know, they never can keep us down. I mean, imagine a book about a Skrull kid. That's kind of what's going on here. The sort of raw craftsmanship is what won me over on this. And also the notion of somebody kind of, it seems like the kid might be kind of starting to get an inkling that maybe, like, the stuff that he does, that his people do, might not be so good, and maybe the First Family might not be so bad. It comes right to his front door, almost literally, because some of his people kidnap one of the members of the First Family, and the rest of them come gunning for him, and so... He runs like headlong into what seems to him an invasion by humans.
Right.
You don't mess with the First Family.
If I know my Astro City, I'm going to bet he learns a lesson.
Quite probably, but you know, I would say that makes it sound trite though, and I don't think that Busiek will push it into a trite direction.
No, it's not
what
a trite.
I think it's spinning off of is. It is spinning off of those kind of morality plays that Stan Lee did, but I do think there will be something more to it than that. I rarely see an Astro City that's quite so simple as that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is my top pick.
What is your cheater pick?
And my cheater pick is also from the spacey genre. This one is the start of a crossover between the Star Wars books at Marvel.
Although just two of them, just Vader and Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a linked story running through them.
Because I was nervous about the crossover. I was like, I don't want them to ruin all these books with crossovers.
Some giant thing.
And in fact, all it is if you're reading Star Wars and Vader, which a lot of you are reading both, it's just going to cross over between those two books.
And the title of this is Vader Down.
Yep.
As in Black Hawk Down.
Yep.
This is a hardcore action sort of storyline, at least this first issue. And am I correct, this is a bookend to it? And there's going to be another bookend after the crossover?
No, I don't remember off the top of my head. I believe there's Vader Down number one.
I thought it was Vader Down number one, then like Darth Vader, Star Wars, and then Vader Down number two.
That's what I was thinking. No. Vader down number one, then Darth Vader, Star Wars, Darth Vader, Star Wars, Darth Vader.
Okay, so just this is the only Vader
this is,
down
This is part one.
Okay.
This is Vader down one shot.
And, you know, essentially the concept, I think we reported on this when we were doing the previews coverage, you know, a month or two back, is that Vader in his pursuit of Luke, who I think has he just recently discovered his...
Vader's discovered that he's Luke's father.
Yeah.
Luke, of course, will not know till the end of Empire. Spoilers for Empire.
And in one of the more recent issues of Vader, he finds out where Luke is.
Right.
Right.
And that's where it picks up with him going there.
Yep. And he runs into, within the first few pages, three squadrons of X-Wings.
Yep.
And they're like... They're like, well, let's just bring this guy down, and it's the ultimate bite off more than you can chew,
yep.
And that could describe the whole issue.
Yep, and no spoilers, but Vader does go down.
Yes, the overall hook for this is he gets grounded on this planet, and I mean, in a way, it's almost like if we had known that where Bin Laden was,
yep, and if Bin Laden had the Force,
and but he was that like individually powerful. And basically, everybody is going to come gunning for him.
Yep.
I think, in a lot of ways, Randy, I was telling Randy this earlier, although I've liked all of the Darth Vader stuff I've read, and, you know, he's had these interesting sort of machinations, and, you know, he's new allies he's brought into the fold, and new characters. I think this is what people have most wanted, because this is just Darth Vader unleashed.
Yeah, if you want to see Darth Vader being a badass.
Yeah. I love the Darth Vader book so much. I was really behind on it. But I caught up in the last four issues, and yeah, he does bring in new allies, but I don't even call them allies. I think they're just pawns.
Right. Absolutely.
He doesn't have friends.
And if you're wondering why they didn't just do this as an issue of Star Wars or an issue of Vader, it's because it's the writer of Star Wars doing a Vader-specific. It's Jason Aaron, and the artist is someone who's not been doing Star Wars, which is Mike Deodato.
Right.
Dear God, who's beautiful.
You know, you may have seen him on Avengers over the last few years, but he's done a lot of stuff.
Did he do Thunderbolts? Wasn't that?
Yeah, he did
Thunderbolts
and
Warren Ellis.
He has a very tight illustrator style, and he's, you know, this is as much as I've seen him pushing, you know, his detail, like, in his whole career.
I mean, just the TIE Fighter and the X-Wings.
There's some stunning battle sequences in here.
Yeah.
Vader does some tactics that are, it's like he's flying around in his TIE Fighter, and he's using the Force, like, to divert, like, proton torpedoes that have been launched at him.
That's like X-Men using their powers in cool ways.
Yep.
Use the Force in badass ways.
Yep.
Yep.
If you're going to have the Force, you got to use the Force. Anyway, I feel like this very much delivers on what people want in a Darth Vader comic.
Yep.
And promises good things for the subsequent issues.
Agreed.
Nick, you're a cheater?
My cheater pick is a Marvel book, because, you know, one of my picks had to be one.
Of course.
And this is the Mighty Thor number one, also written by Jason Aaron, art by Russell Dodderman, and this sort of just picks up right after the series ended, you know, before Secret Wars.
Yeah.
Sort of picks up right after that. We know Jane Foster's Thor, we know she's dying from cancer, and we don't quite know why she can't be healed or anything, but we're definitely... Aaron is definitely dealing with that.
Yeah, they addressed that here in what I thought was a very clever bit.
Yeah, I really like this character. Aaron has sort of humanized her in a way that I haven't seen Jane Foster done in a long time. I kind of like Jane Foster, but she's never been really written all that well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I feel like JMS probably had the best previous sort of spin on it. Other than that, she was just sort of a somewhat generic romantic.
And then I liked her in that All Ages Thor book that Chris Samnee drew. I forget who was writing. Was it Jeff Parker?
Yeah.
I liked her in there. But this one is a little bit
more... No, it was Roger Langridge.
Oh, it was Roger Langridge. That's right. She's a little more nuanced in here. Russell Dodderman does an amazing job on it, but there's also sort of Roxxon stuff, and...
Yeah, Aaron clearly likes to use Roxxon Evil Corporation. There's a lot of not-so-subtle nods to Roxxon as a Fox analog.
Well, yeah, and there's also... Well,
of course, they were originally just like an ExxonMobil mega corporation in the 70s, and they were overtly used to critique the kind of...
But there's also another organization that she was dealing with beforehand... involved as well. And also there's a big, you know, all of the, what is it called? The All War?
Whatever that is, yeah, with Malekith.
So begins the War of Realms, which is sort of all the different realms kicked off by Malekith, which, is interesting.
Is that like the nine worlds that are in Norse mythology that they use? So like Asgard and Midgard.
Yeah, the
and...
the light elves. Isn't that what they're...
Yeah, light elves, what
they're being
them.
Sort of slaughtered by the dark elves. But and there's just some cool stuff in here. And there's even, you know, some superheroes show up, like some of the Avengers... because she is part of it.
Yeah, I gotta say, one of the things I like about the all-new, all-different Avengers, which they haven't even put the team together in the book yet, but it is, for the longest time, ever since Bendis took it over, it has been like, here's a bunch of characters of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And his notion was, it was like the Justice League, therefore it was like Marvel's biggest characters, so it was like Spider-Man and Wolverine, those guys. And then it became sort of this weird mishmash of different characters.
That was Hickman's idea.
Hickman's mega
all-new Avengers... No, Bendis did it before with Hickman. I mean, he always had a mishmash of smaller characters. You know,
but
brought Squirrel Girl in. Yeah.
Hickman went global.
But the way they're doing it now, it is almost like it is the... it is the big... The icons of Marvel again, not in the way of, like, the selling icons... But the Avengers, like Thor is an Avenger again. Iron Man is an Avenger again. Cap is an Avenger again. Now, they're all different people except for Iron Man. But that means that we see the Avengers pop up in Thor. We see the Avengers pop up in Ms. Marvel. We see the Avengers pop up in Captain America. And I like that. It makes the universe feel more connected to me again.
Right.
And I will say one of the best scenes in this entire book is actually Jane Foster's back and forth between Volstagg. And Volstagg
that
is
was
sort
fun.
Of her friend that's there during sort of cancer treatments.
Yeah, it's like he's at the hospital.
He's at the hospital waiting for her. And
The art by Russell Dodderman, his art of Volstagg is great.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the Volstagg you remember, always sort of wanting food and talking about food. But he's a true friend.
The Brian Blessed of comics.
Yeah, and that's true.
I really can't recommend this one more highly. It's really interesting, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
I bet you could recommend it more highly.
Yeah,
I'm
let's
sure
hear
I
it.
Could.
I think you were holding back.
The only thing I'm missing is Thor.
My cheater pick is also a Marvel book, and it is also Ms. Marvel has been one of my favorite books, and the other favorite book of mine is Spider-Woman. I really love this book, and the new number one comes out with a 8 months later, where Jess is pregnant.
Right, it's one of the more dramatic covers from the relaunch, in that not a lot of pregnant superheroine covers.
So basically, if you want to know who the father is, you're not going to know. They don't tell us. But instead, this is about what happens when someone who has sort of already had a foot out the door. She sort of didn't want to be an Avenger anymore. She wanted to help people as a private eye.
Yeah, street level person.
And so this is sort of pushing it with the other foot out the door and sort of retire for a little while. So she is sort of struggling with, she is 8 months pregnant and can't be a superhero anymore. She can't actively be a superhero. Ben Urich, her partner, and Porcupine, her other partner, are sort of forcing her to take a back seat. So she is basically helping train Porcupine to take her place as a hero. And
he's kind of a badass.
And it's pretty good. And then there's a great bit with her friendship with Captain Marvel. And they're sort of their bonding. But the story jumps around. It does the 6 months ago and then 3 months ago and jumps us forward to this point. Of her deciding to take maternity leave from even sort of helping out. And superheroes on maternity leave have different challenges, and they do some funny stuff with that. And they also have different opportunities. For example, an alien hospital with the best technology that she finally decides out of boredom to check out, and things go from there.
It's
really good. It's really fun. It's not just goofy, because as much as I love something like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl or Howard the Duck, those are pretty much goofy books.
Yeah.
This is sort of more serious with a sense of humor. And it's got fantastic artwork by Javier Rodriguez, who's been doing this since the costume redesigns.
In a lot of ways, it reminds me of Hawkeye.
Yeah, I can see that.
It reminds me of the Fraction Aja Hawkeye.
It does me too, except that the Fraction Aja Hawkeye was a little bit withdrawn from superhero life. Like, it was very much street-level type stuff.
Well, yeah.
Spider-Woman has a little bit of that She-Hulk thing to it. If anything, that's what reminds me of She-Hulk, because it's got
right. The
big superheroes, aliens, all that kind of stuff is very much still a part of her life.
I agree.
So what I'm getting is that at some point, Porcupine is going to get to, like babysit for her, right?
Yes, that's almost certain to happen.
Porcupine is a fun character.
Yeah.
He's kind of a likable doofus.
Yep. I really like this book and hope people will check it out. Also on my list this week is a fair amount of number ones and some other stuff as well. A new company called 451 Studios. They seem to be one of these people who are maybe developing stuff for TV or movies or whatever. But this is a book called Six, or possibly Sussixix, because it's spelled S6X.
Right. Maybe sure it's just Six.
Yeah.
Nope, it's Sussixix.
Maybe not the best logo design. But
anyway, this is a book. It's created by George Pelicano, so you might know as the guy who writes all the episodes of The Wire where somebody dies or horrible things happen. He also wrote a lot of Treme. He's also a crime novelist. He's a well-known guy in TV circles. He did the idea, and it was written by a guy, or maybe a woman, I don't know, named Andy Ewington, illustrated by a guy I don't know, named Max Schater. This is basically a story of a small six-person squad that in Iraq that something happens, and they come across some money. And they decide to keep it for themselves. And this jumps back and forth to how they got in that position, what happens when they get back in the world and sort of disappear and show up with the money. And when one of their squad mates' wives needs help, what happens? They maybe are going to get back together to help her in the modern day as sort of modern vigilantes. It's got a lot of that Punisher feeling to it.
I was going to say, that sounds like, conceptually, that sounds like a... an expansion on the idea of like the old Kelly's Heroes / Three Kings.
Yeah.
Like what might happen after you get the money.
It's a great, it's a great sort of, movie pitch basically.
Yeah,
it's an action movie on paper. Really well done. I liked it quite a bit. Valiant launches their new Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, their immortal hero who is, this gets into sort of how he reincarnates and why and what his goals are and that kind of thing. Has a really nice art by a guy named Raoul Allen. If you have not checked this out, you don't need to know anything about Valiant. You can just pick up Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. Newest issue of Rat Queens, number 13, which is always fun. And has Betty buying steampunk gear and wandering the city. And that's always fun. And the girls are basically split up. They're in this magic town and dealing with that. And their stories continue on that. That book continues to be great. Beauty number 4 is getting into more of an action conspiracy vein, and I'm liking that book quite a bit. Star Wars number 12 wraps the second story arc in fine form with a scene that we've never seen before, but I thought was just a really cool idea.
Bantha pooping.
Not Bantha pooping. Star Wars Kanan is number 8 is the new story arc that is flashing back to how Kanan became one of the youngest Padawans ever. Sort of what his Jedi master mistress was like. That's really interesting. Usagi Yojimbo presents another one-shot story. This is the 150th issue of Usagi, but there's no special story or anything. It's just this is a Westerner fencer who comes to Japan and is kind of arrogant and runs afoul of Usagi and how that happens.
Where is he from?
Spain? He is from, I think, maybe Spain.
He is there for his king.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Star Trek Green Lantern number 5 continues. I've been really enjoying this one. Jughead number 2 is a lot of fun. Has another weird Jughead has a dream sequence in which he's a time traveling cop. This has the artist from Squirrel Girl, Erica Henderson, written by Chip Zdarsky. It's a lot of fun. And then in trade news, Ms. Marvel has volume 4, which is called Last Days, which was probably my favorite of the Ms. Marvel stories. Really, really good stuff. Sees her teaming up with her hero, Captain Marvel, and then having a lot of real emotional moments with her family and her friends. The quickly collected Star Wars Shattered Empire, which is the Greg Rucka, Marco Cicchetto story of what happens after the Empire falls and Return of the Jedi. Spoilers for Return of the Jedi and the Empire falls. Giant Days, Volume 1, which is the first 4 issues of this sort of, I would say, if the Lumberjanes went to college, that Boom Studios does. Really nice art, lots of fun. I read that last night, and it's really enjoyable. Rick and Morty, Volume 1, which if you've been digging that, or if you like the show, it feels very much like the show and is a lot of fun. And finally, for me, I don't read Astro City in single issues like Dave. I wait for them to put out these nice hardcovers, and I'm always just anxiously awaiting them. Finally, there's a new hardcover, Astro City Lover's Quarrel, which I know has one of those stories that Dave mentioned that I've been very much excited to read. It is the 12th volume in the Astro City series, and looking forward to digging into that. Nick, what's on your list?
I have Star-Lord number 1, mm-hmm. which sees Sam Humphries come back on, but instead of sort of continuing where Star-Lord is, this is actually a year-one style story about how he got into space.
Yep.
So Ash was really fond of it, had a great sense of humor, brought sort of...
Does it have the rest of the Guardians in it?
No, it actually is just Peter Quill.
Okay.
and sort of his exploits with NASA and how he gets to gets into space and gets into trouble. Black Knight number one, which is the new Frank Thierry book focusing on Dane Whitman.
That's Marvel's Black Knight.
And he's trapped in a sort of place that was featured in Secret Wars called Weird World. And
it's an old, weird old Marvel fantasy property. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And he sort of transformed a section of it into a place called New Avalon. And sort of him dealing with the outliers of people trying to take over, retake that section. I actually thought it was a really good issue. It brings some aspects of like Game of Thrones with sort of people vying for his seat of power. And but there's also some cool stuff from the Marvel Universe brought into it as well. Batman Europa, which I'm going to say very strange in the sense that it is Batman and Joker buddy cop.
Yeah.
Because they are both dying of a sickness.
This is kind of like a kind of a out of continuity story, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's I think it's been in the process for quite a while. It's
this is what Jim Lee was doing before they tapped him for Justice League,
right? And right. It's written by Stefano Matteo Casali, which I'm not sure.
European creator,
teaming up with Brian Azzarello. Working with Giuseppe Camuncoli, who used to did some work on Spider-Man, if I'm
He's
not mistaken.
He's done a bunch of stuff, yeah.
And
I like it.
Him and Jim Lee work on the art. It's very much sort of like the Batman Hush era. It's in that costume. The Killer Croc that's involved is the giant lizard Killer Croc.
Yep.
It's just a fun story of seeing Batman being Batman while sort of faced with this insane thing of working with your most hated foe.
I think Batman working together with the Joker is something that people will want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and especially with the Jim Lee artwork, I think this is something that people should definitely check out. And plus, it takes place in Europe, so it's not in Gotham City.
No. Okay. I hope they end up friends in the end.
I'm sure that'll
I'm
happen.
Sure they will wind up sipping tea and biscotti.
I was thinking of a high five that they freeze frame on.
Yep.
Deadpool number two, which is my friends here would... They love this book.
For so those who love Deadpool, there's Deadpool.
The cover is kind of great as sort of Deadpool wearing Doctor Strange's outfit at a kid's party, because that won't go wrong. The second issue of I Hate Fairyland, Scotty Young's sort of tongue-in-cheek look at Wizard of Oz if the main character got stuck in Oz and, like, was there forever. And her slow descent into madness. Secret Wars 2...
T-O-O.
Yes.
Like Secret Wars also.
Which is sort of a humorous look at Secret Wars by several different creators. I believe we have Kate Leth, Al Ewing, Rob Guillory does a script, Eric Powell is involved, Jonathan Hickman writes a very kind of biting look at Secret Wars, even though he's the guy who's writing Secret Wars. It's actually very tongue-in-cheek, very fun. I thought the art is gorgeous. In a lot of the different properties. So, definitely one to check out, especially if you want to chuckle. An annual for the Uncanny Avengers, which is weird since Uncanny Avengers just started.
Well, that's not for the current Uncanny Avengers.
It actually is.
Yeah, I saw that and I was a little shocked too.
Really?
But Robinson steps in.
I guess an
in.
Annual can drop in wherever
okay.
they need it to. All
yeah, right. James Robinson steps in, but it is definitely the team of... the new era. It's got Quicksilver,
is
Brother
Deadpool
Voodoo,
in it?
Deadpool.
Okay.
They must have just had it kind of being worked on.
And I think it is actually sort of flashing back to something from the previous run of Remender's Uncanny Avengers. So
okay.
It's sort of this weird kind of tie-in
like maybe
thing.
They tweaked a story that was going to originally come out previous to that.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, we can work this into a...
But it has stunning art by Mark Lamming and Jose Giles. I really, really like it. It reminds me a lot of Steve Epting's work. And then the second issue to The Uncanny Inhumans, which sees Black Bolt continue to sort of have war with Kang, which is kind of cool. But that is all I had.
Dave, what's on your stack?
All right, what remains for me that y'all haven't mentioned is the second issue of Extraordinary X-Men, which I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the first issue. Jeff Lemire writing, Umberto Ramos on the art. And this continues sort of the recruitment process that's going on. They run into some snags. Does explain who that Sentinel was at the end of the first one.
Oh, cool. I wanted to know that.
Yeah, it's outright explained. And the notable thing in here is they drop a major X-Men villain in who will clearly be the big bad of the first arc. So, cool. Villain revealed. There's the third issue of Captain America, which I enjoyed quite a bit.
Cap Wolf.
Cap Wolf, indeed. Nick Spencer clearly has not just one, but both feet, I think, planted in Mark Gruenwald's 80s Cap run. One of the legendary runs. But because it was not a huge influence, I would say, on Brubaker's run, or not, like, stylistically it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Like, he notably said he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah. So this is, and this one is, though. You know, already D-Man, his partner in there, was a nod to that.
Yep.
And one of the notable crazy things that happened at the time was that there was a story back in the 80s where Captain America literally became, like, a werewolf guy.
Yep.
And this follows up on that as... in a somewhat tongue-in-cheek at times way.
A little bit, yeah.
As they break out a Marvel villain that I only know from the old Marvel Universe handbooks. I've never actually read any stories.
He was a big bad in the Mark Gruenwald. Now, here's the interesting. This villain was dead.
Was he?
And they explain that in here as to how he did, how he survived. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty clever. And in so doing, they sort of remodded him for the new era, and I like that quite a bit. Gruenwald's Cap is my favorite Cap.
Yeah.
So this is hitting right in my sweet spot. I love what he's doing here. And I thought this was a ton of fun.
Without saying too much about it, within the last few pages, I believe fans of the Gruenwald Cap run will be very happy.
I might have squeed.
Yes. Randy shrieked like a girl.
If he can just bring Diamond back in as a love interest, I'll be super happy.
Finally, here I just wanted to mention the fifth issue of the Godzilla in Hell. I don't know if it's the last one or if
it is. It's fifth issue, right?
It is.
Yeah, five is the last issue.
I don't know who this artist is on it. Written and illustrated by Dave Wachter.
I don't know him either.
New to me, but I really like it. Begins with a very icy color palette, as it looks like he's going through the icy level of Hell. But it actually, it's the one that maybe reminds me, visually at least, most of the first issue, which was, I thought, the strongest one. Who was that artist?
James Stokoe.
But it has almost a little bit more of the sort of European, heavy metal style coloring and richness to it. So anyway, I haven't loved every single issue of this, but since they're all really kind of standalone visual, vignettes, like... What can we put Godzilla against, that's at his scale, basically hell versions of it. This one looks pretty cool, so I'm looking forward to reading it. Anyway, that is it. Oh, you know what? I also wanted to mention there is the soft cover hit of Superman Earth 1 Volume 3.
Oh, yeah.
So if anybody's been following that but been waiting for the soft cover that hits, I don't have a huge fondness for that series, but it has elements I like in it. I'm a Superman fan, and... I'm always kind of interested to see what stuff JMS brings to it. Certainly, the introduction of a hooker, a prostitute, as a quasi-love interest in the second volume was a bit of a surprise curveball. And I thought that it was interesting that he kind of stayed with it and didn't sort of do that's interesting, now let's move on to traditional Lois stuff. It was somewhere between friend and girlfriend. But it was an interesting story. One of the random things that I was like, whoa, that's not something you usually see in Superman. I had a feeling that JMS was kind of looking a little bit to the, Jesus administering to all, and Superman being friend to all. So I never saw it read the third volume because it was hardcover, so I'm going to take a look at this and see what it has to offer.
All right.
One more thing.
Oh. Yep.
Oh. Don't go too far fast. No, but I want to mention that we did get some new action figures in.
Oh, yeah.
And these are pretty cool because they're new DC Universe.
The DC Icons.
They're called DC Icons, but it's a new sort of way for them because they're super poseable.
Yes.
They've got lots of points of articulation. And they're sort of not just focusing on New 52 era stuff, they're focusing on sort of the iconic looks for a lot of these characters.
They're actually specifically focusing away from New 52.
In the second wave, there are going to have of them.
Okay.
So it's sort of taking all of the DC Universe and sort of, putting whichever one they feel like.
Actually, I guess that's true because one of them is New 52 in this wave, too.
Yeah, and that would be
Mr. Miracle from Earth 2.
Earth 2. But then you also have the Mike Grell Green Arrow.
Which is so good.
God, it is so cool. And then there's a sort of Jim Lee esque Batman.
Yeah, okay, call it from Last Rites, a story Last that none Rites. Of us could call to right to mind.
And so somebody Google that.
And the third one is A Dead Man, which.
Yeah.
It looks like classic Neil Adams.
It does. And it's kind of cool. It comes with sort of this ghostly 60s. Visage version of him that I think snaps on or does something cool.
Yeah.
But they all come with great accessories. But I know Batman comes with like a grappling hook. Green Arrow, of course, comes with a ton of arrows and bow. And
I'm going to be very tempted by that Deadman figure.
Well, when I saw them, I was like, okay, they look just sort of like standard DC articulation, like DC Direct. But they're not. They actually are sort of coming up on Marvel Legends style, where they're superposable, they look great. I'm going to be very, very... I know a Flash one is hitting with a cosmic treadmill, and I'm going to be like... Yeah, I'm probably going to need that. So, it should be a great line.
Yep. And finally, one more thing, why not? We also are getting all the Star Wars Episode 7 pop finals.
Yeah.
So, BB-8, Kylo Ren.
Stormtrooper, the First Order.
Yeah, so.
They all look cool.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely check them out.
All right, so that is it for comics for this week. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about some games and TV and possibly more. All right, so last week, Nick and I got a chance to sit down and finally play a game we've been wanting to play for a while, which was Star Wars Imperial Assault.
Because this month has to be taken over by all things Star Wars.
It does. It does, actually.
In preparation.
Yes, down before the machine.
It's true. In fact, as you listen to this, Nick and I are both anxiously chomping at the bit to go play Battlefront.
Yeah, I mean, I'm immediately going to go home and shove the disc into my player because... Obviously, it's going to have like an hour.
First day download. I'm going to do the same thing while I'm recording my TV Dudes podcast tonight.
But that's not what we're going
to
talk about.
At any rate, right now, if you're listening to this any time at night, if you go on to PlayStation 4 and you have Nick or I friended, you'll probably find us on the battlefields of Hoth or Tatooine or Endor.
If you want to friend me,
yes,
friend me.
What's your
Captain Bud? It's Cap and Bud.
And mine is Lunchlander. Yes, by all means, please send a friend request.
Yeah, we'd love to play. And if you have Rebel or not Rebel Assault,
Battlefront. Unless you're super good, in which case, just friend Nick. I'm just kidding.
Kill Randy. They should come phone the noobs.
Anyway, we played Imperial Assault, which is a board game from Fantasy Flight. It is Fantasy Flight, of course, has Armada, which is capital ships, and X-Wing miniatures, and, you know, the role-playing game. They have all the rights to the Star Wars stuff. But Imperial Assault is their squad-based ground combat thing.
Like a miniature skirmish.
Yeah.
It's not a skirmish game.
That's right. You said it was more like Descent.
It's more like Descent. Yeah. It's sort of a...
I mean, it's an ongoing sort of story.
It's not unlike the RPG if it was just sort of combat-oriented. Yeah. So you each have a character... And then one of the players is playing the Empire.
Yes. And you're given sort of a scenario that you have to solve.
And there's a time limit, and it's a harsh time limit.
Jesus Christ, is the time limit harsh?
Yeah, we played three scenarios, and the thing is, it looks super, looks like a ton of miniatures, looks super complicated. The setup takes a little while, but honestly, we started about 7:30 and played till about 11:30.
Yeah,
and
we played
three scenarios with setup and playthrough.
And basically each map is modular tiles that fit together and are double-sided to sort of mimic different locales and things that you can, whatever mission you're on.
There's a rule book that tells you how to set things up, and it's not like something like Memoir 44 where there's a lot of variety.
And sort of the missions are sectioned out by a... like regular game mission, and then there are side stories.
So, for example, we started with a game mission where you had to go and destroy these consoles.
Yes.
You had to do it in five turns. You had to blow up like four consoles.
Yes.
And we managed to do it.
We did.
And we were getting cocky because it was hard.
Cocky.
But we did it. And then our side mission was to go and help distract the Hutt by knocking over one of his spice warehouses. And we were going to have the aid of Chewbacca.
Yeah. We're trying to basically forgo Jabba the Hutt finding Han Solo.
Yeah, so there was spice that we were supposed to go over and knock over, and we were being faced off by Trandoshan bounty hunters and a Nexu, which are these evil little beasties, and we had Chewbacca on our side. If we completed the mission, we would have gotten Chewbacca as a regular member of our team. We did not. We missed the time limit by quite a bit.
Yeah, we got sidelined by the bounty hunters, and
And the next two ate the Wookiees, more or less. More
I gotta say, I like the concepts on these missions. Yeah. They sound cool.
And then we went after that. Even though you fail, you do get to keep going. The notion is that a pilot comes and sweeps you in, and you get out of there. So you're like a rebel commando special unit, and like Nick was playing
sort of Jedi in training.
Jedi in training, a Twi'lek, right?
Yep, it was a Twi'lek.
And one of our other friends was playing a Wookiee. And I was playing one of the other guys was playing a human rebel like soldier. Yes. And then I was playing a Bothan sniper. And that was our team.
Manny Bothan.
He has little cards with different special abilities. And the final mission was to go onto this, and we had to shut down four terminals before the time ran out. And we had to split up into basically three teams, and it was near impossible. We didn't complete it. And by the end, the guy was able to pull out an AT-ST, and it sort of emerged from the woods right next to my character. And
because that was over fast.
Yeah, because there was sort of this mechanic where every time you open sort of a door to get to one of the panels, you sort of raise the threat level. Yeah. And the person playing the Imperials gets a sort of set, like, numerical value for every door that's opened that they can sort of jump up the threat by calling in reinforcements or, you know, doing the ATST.
But the gameplay itself is really cool. You're the player takes a turn, then the Imperial players take a turn, then one of the other players, so that your team gets to sort of alternate with the Imperials. I really like this. It was not what I was expecting. I was expecting a skirmish level kind of board game, like more like Warhammer 40K type thing, and it's not that.
I think one of the best mechanics that I really, really liked was the fact that you had your character card and it had X, you know, health point value.
Right.
But once that went away, you flipped the card over and you actually got another point value, so you weren't dead after
being... You were severely wounded.
Okay. So one of your sort of powers got limited to one thing, and maybe your movement was down one because you're bloodied, essentially.
You just flip the card.
Yeah, and...
So basically, instead of having, like, 25 hit points, you'd get 14 hit points and then 11 hit points at a lower value.
Yeah, and it felt like you got a little bit more. You weren't instantly killed, which is nice.
Yep.
Because this is very skewed to the Imperials.
It is, definitely so.
It is hard, sort of like Pandemic is, but it's fun every time.
Yeah.
So it's a great game.
I really recommend it. I'm having a hard time not buying it. And also, we didn't talk about the minis. The minis are gorgeous. These are not pre-painted, but they're pre-molded.
Yeah.
And the technology, I don't know if it's 3D printing or whatever, has really gotten impressive because there's all these little details. Like if you paint these minis and if you go online, you'll see people have painted them. The detail is really there. All the packs, all the weapons, all the face, everything is really detailed and cool looking.
Right.
All right, so Nick, you want to give us a quick 5-minute recap of AMC's new show?
Yeah, AMC aired a new show last night called Into the Badlands. It's sort of this post-apocalyptic where technology is gone, weaponry is gone, and sort of the world is divvied up into sort of regents and areas controlled by sort of warlords. And like martial arts and swordplay have become sort of the weapon of choice. And it's about one of these people who is the underling of a baron. It's got some things in common with Lazarus, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, okay.
More of an action.
But more of a definitely action piece.
Yeah, they do a lot of the sort of martial arts wushu kind of thing, right? Yes,
and this main character, they have a specific name, but he's sort of like the best of the best of these guards for the baron. He kind of finds a kid that has maybe special abilities that is wanted by all the other barons and sort of starts to realize that maybe this world isn't what it should be and there might be better stuff outside of the known world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of got a lot in common with anime or manga, sort of divvies up in that sort of information and some of those story ideas. But the action is beautiful. The swordplay is a lot of fun. The action is
beautiful. You mean in that crouching tiger type way?
Yeah, in that sort of sense, it's kind of blazing speed. A more approachable version of, you know, how Bourne Supremacy or Bourne Identity did the quick, fast, but it was almost like close. This was not as close, so it had a lot more room to breathe, but it was that fast-paced movement of swordplay going on, like... The main character fights off 12 people with just bare hands, and it's just quick and dirty, but also elegant, which is kind of surprising. So if you are in the mood for kind of that wushu action, There's not another show on television that does that this well. And honestly, it's just beautiful to look at. The sets are great. The main sort of place area that it is very utilitarian, but it's surrounded by poppy fields that, I mean, of course, that's what they're, you know, trying to farm to get, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's beautiful. The red sort of pops. So the cinematography is great. So you have,
like, saturated colors and sort of some awareness of that.
AMC spent some money on the show, and you could definitely see it. There's not a lot of actors that I recognize. I know the main guy is, like, a huge name in sort of martial arts. He's a known quantity. I did not know him. I feel bad. And then a couple of the other actors I recognized, but they weren't, like... I know one of the guys was from Lord of the Rings, who plays one of the barons, the sort of head baron. And he had a long list of movies that he's been in, so he's definitely a person you're going to recognize. But I thought it was fun. I'm going to continue to watch it. I wasn't, like, completely sold on it.
Hmm.
Because, you know, the anime stuff I've seen before, and it's not reinventing the wheel or anything. Right.
But some people, imagine would really plug into that.
Oh, yeah, very much so. So, yeah, I'd definitely give it a watch.
Cool. Well, we have other stuff to talk about, but it's been kind of a long podcast with other stuff, so we're going to wrap up there. And until next time,
Yojo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.